Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Seems like a lot longer than 4 years. It seems like we've had same-sex marriage in the United States for 40 years. And do you remember how the goalpost got moved right before Obergefell, when suddenly it was not about whether or not a couple, a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, could appeal to the state and say, look, we just want the same institution that heterosexual couples have access to? No, it was framed in a very different way. Do you remember? It was, they'd had something taken away from them, as though there once was a right to same-sex marriage, but it was taken away from them. I never heard anybody make the case for that credibly, but that was how the rhetoric sounded. Well, 4 years ago, they got what they wanted. They got Obergefell, and they might have gotten something more that they wanted, or maybe they wanted more all along. We're going to be talking about the 4th anniversary of Obergefell and consent-based marriage. Dr. Ryan Anderson is our guest. William E. Simon, Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas. He's founder and editor of The Public Discourse, author of several books, including Truth Over Rule, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and a recent column for the Daily Signal titled 4 Years On, Marriage Equality Slogan Still Doesn't Add Up. Dr. Anderson, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be with you.
Why did that slogan, marriage equality, work so well?
For two reasons. One is that, who could be against equality? Equality is an American value going back to the very beginning. This is one of our founding values. And it was great marketing, right? You could put one of those red equal signs up on your Twitter avatar, your Facebook profile picture, a bumper sticker, et cetera, et cetera. And it was also utterly vacuous, because it doesn't tell us anything about what marriage is. Right? I'm in favor of marriage equality, and what I mean by that is we should treat all marriages the same. We should treat all real marriages equally, but we still need to figure out what makes a relationship a marital relationship. We still need to figure out what is marriage, and that slogan, marriage equality, didn't move us one inch closer to answering the real question in that debate: what's the nature of marriage? What's the purpose of marriage? And so it was wonderful marketing. It wasn't particularly good philosophy.
You say that before you can get into considerations of equal protection under the law, you have to know what the law is actually trying to protect. What do you mean by that?
Let's take a hopefully a non-controversial example. To get a driver's license, you need to have the ability of sight. You need to have functioning vision. You can't be blind. And no one would say that it's a violation of equality that sighted people can get a driver's license, but blind people cannot. Because the purpose of licensing drivers is to show that someone has the capability, the capacity to safely maneuver a vehicle. And if you're blind, you can't do that. And so you have to know, like, what's the purpose of the law, the purpose of this registry, right? Driver's licensing. What's the purpose of this? It's to ensure safe vehicular travel. What's a valid requirement for that? One valid requirement is sight, and so it doesn't violate equality when you say no driver's license is for blind people. By contrast, if you had a registry for home ownership and you said blind people can't have the deed to a house, right? You can't have the title of a home, then that would be a violation of equality, because sightedness is utterly irrelevant to home ownership. Right? Blind people and sighted people can still own a home, take care of a home, pay the mortgage on time. And so that would be a violation of equality if you said blind people cannot purchase a house and then have the deed registered at the county office. So this is where, when we look at the marriage laws, you need to say, all right, well, what's the nature of marriage? What's the purpose of marriage? Why is the state taking an interest in marriage to then determine whether any given marital law is upholding equality or violating equality?
What is the consent-based view of marriage?
Yeah, this is a view, Justice Alito referred to it as the consent-based view. Obviously, everyone thinks consent plays a role in marriage. The question is marriage based on consent and only consent? And that latter clause, only consent, is what's really important here. This is the idea that marriage is simply a union of consenting adults of whatever size or shape the consent comes in. So if a man and a woman can consent to be married, so too can a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, so too can three people, four people, multiple partners. It could be a permanent union. You could consent to have a till death do us part marriage, or you could consent to have a wed lease, a temporary marriage. You could consent to have an open relationship, or you could consent to have a closed relationship. You could consent to have a monogamous relationship, or a polygamous relationship, or a polyamorous relationship. Nothing determines the contour of the relationship apart from the consent itself. That's what the consent vision of marriage is kind of meant to capture.
So it doesn't even have to be a sexual relationship. It doesn't even have to be an amorous relationship. It can be any arrangement between any two or more individuals, essentially.
That's exactly correct. There's no reason in principle why a marital relationship needs to be a sexual relationship, why it needs to be a loved-based relationship. When another one of the slogans was love equals love, it's not clear why marriage needs to be loved-based. Some people married for money. Some people marry for business reasons. On the consent-based vision, that's all the same. And while we're on that slogan of love equals love, it's simply false. Now, there are different types of love, right? Spousal love is a distinctive form of love. It's different than neighbor love. It's different than intergenerational love, right? The love that parents have for their kids, that kids have for their parents, these aren't all the same. And so another way in which like the sloganeering around marriage equality or around love equals love, it just betrays sloppy reasoning.
Isn't the nonsensical thing about basing a legal view of marriage on consent is that not only, as you have pointed out, it is so broad as to include almost anything in principle, but also it essentially says, why should the state care? Why should the state have any interest? But it seems nonsensical then to go to the state to have this enforced in law, if by definition of consent, the state doesn't care who I'm friends with, to tell you the truth.
Exactly. If marriage is simply about consenting adult romance, consenting adult caregiving, consenting adult contractual relationships, why is the government in the marriage business? The government's not in the best friend business. The government's not in various other forms of like intimate personal relationships. Why is it in the marital business? On this vision of marriage, I mean, the historic answer is that marriage is a comprehensive union. It's a conjugal union where a man and a woman unite as one flesh in the type of relationship that could produce new life, and then in a type of relationship that you would unite that new life with both his or her mother and father. And the state has an interest in that relationship because that's the relationship that can produce the next generation, that can raise the next generation up to the age of maturity, up to the age at which they can then be kind of law-abiding, productive citizens, member of society, something that the state needs, but the state can't produce, right? The state needs the next generation. The state needs the creation of new citizens, but the state can't either directly produce those citizens or raise those citizens. And so the state recognizes a civil society institution, the marital institution, as performing a crucial public work.
Did the majority in the Obergefell decision, did they either tacitly or explicitly go with a consent-based view of marriage?
Yes, and then that's more or less the critique that Chief Justice Roberts and then Justices Scalia, Alito, and Thomas, all four of them, make in their dissenting opinions. And the larger critique that they make is, and we aren't philosopher kings. The nine of us sitting on the U.S. Supreme Court have no better knowledge of what marriage is than all of the citizens, which is why this should have been determined democratically. The Constitution itself is silent about what marriage is. The Constitution doesn't answer the question, is marriage a consent relationship or is it a conjugal relationship? Is it simply about consenting adults or is it about a certain type of consenting adult relationship. The Constitution doesn't answer that question. And so where the Constitution is silent, so too should the justices. And so their point was, Justice Kennedy is assuming, smuggling into his opinion, a certain vision of marriage, and then he is declaring that the Constitution requires his vision of marriage. And that's simply, it's very similar to what happened in Roe v. Wade. The Constitution doesn't say that abortion is a constitutional right, but the justices simply manufactured that right. The same thing took place in Obergefell.
Did the decision of Obergefell, did it in any way view marriage as a gendered institution, that is male and female, or a genderless institution?
Genderless. It entirely ignores the fact that the two halves of humanity are male and female, that those two halves of humanity can unite as one flesh in the biblical language. A man and a woman can unite as a single entity in a marital act. And then that male and that female, that's what's required for producing the next generation. And then every one of us has both a mother and a father. We might not have a relationship with our mother and our father, but every human being on the face of the earth today and throughout all of human history has come into existence because of the union of male and female. And so there's a paternal and a maternal source to every one of us. And the Supreme Court just ignores all of that, right? It degenders marriage. It says that the fact that we are a gendered species, the fact that we are a sexed species, is utterly irrelevant to what marriage is. And the court is now imposing a new definition of marriage under the guise of equality.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is our guest, William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. When we come back, I wonder if he thinks Justice Kennedy thoroughly thought out the consequences, the ramifications of his ruling.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the fourth anniversary of Obergefell and consent-based view of marriage. Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation is our guest. Ryan, do you think that Justice Kennedy thoroughly thought through the ramifications of his decision all the way to what this different view of marriage would mean in the future?
It's hard to know what the justice himself thinks on this. So let me answer the question by just pointing to what I do know, some of the other leading advocates for marriage equality. And the general attitude seems to be, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And it's been amazing to me how quickly things that throughout the past decade or so, while we were debating whether or not to redefine marriage, people said, oh, but I'm definitely against X, Y, and Z. And now they're like, well, maybe I'm okay with that. And so just last week, you might have seen that the APA issued a new task force. And this is the Task Force on Consensual Non-Monogamy. And it says, the Task Force on Consensual Non-Monogamy promotes awareness and inclusivity about consensual non-monogamy and diverse expressions of intimate relationships. These include, but are not limited to, people who practice polyamory, open relationships, swinging, relationship anarchy, and other types of ethical non-monogamous relationships. Now, a decade ago, when we were having a national conversation about marriage, and you said, wait, this is going to lead to polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, people say, oh, you're a scaremonger. Of course it'll never go there. And we said, but wait, once you get rid of the male-female part of marriage, right, the binary of one man, one woman, one mother, one father, one wife, one husband, what's magical about the number two? Right? These are all the arguments that people like me were making for a decade, and the response was, oh, you're scaremongering. We will never go there. Of course I'm against that. And then a few years later, like, well, wait a minute. We need a task force to investigate this. Maybe it is a good idea. And so I don't know what Justice Kennedy himself thinks about any of this, but I think there are many people who, if you don't believe in eternal truths, if you don't believe in timeless moral principles, if you don't believe in the concept of truth, everything is just evolving. Every standard is evolving, and there are different standards for different times and places, then you might say, yeah, today monogamy is a good idea, but tomorrow ethical non-monogamy might be a good idea.
So you write, the consent-based view of marriage simply fails as a theory of marriage because it cannot explain any of the historical marital norms. Do you believe that the more thoughtful of those who are pushing consent-based marriage really are aiming at eliminating the historical marital norms?
Some explicitly are. I did a book right after Obergefell was issued titled Truth Overruled: The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. And at one point in the book, I just quote kind of activist after activist after activist who is saying, oh yeah, gay marriage is just a stepping stone to getting rid of any normativity with respect to marriage and family and sexuality apart from consent. That the only moral principle that matters here is that it be a consenting relationship. And so you also now see various people opening the question of, should we have ethical, consenting, intergenerational sexual relationships, where intergenerational sexual relationship is kind of their clinical term for pedophilia. There was a recent book published. The title was something like In Defense of Intergenerational Love. The original title was going to be In Defense of Pedophilia. And so I do think for some people, but not all, and probably not the majority, there are some people who see this as simply a way of advancing further in the sexual revolution, of saying all these outdated Judeo-Christian moral norms surrounding sex and the body are precisely that, outdated. And the only moral norm that matters is consent.
You say that long before we were debating same-sex marriage, it was actually heterosexuals who brought into a liberal ideology about sexuality that made a mess of marriage. What kind of things are you talking about there? Give us some examples.
Oh, sure. I mean, the basic idea here is that before marriage was redefined legally at the Supreme Court, it was redefined culturally with the sexual revolution, with the 60s, the hookup culture, the introduction of no-fault divorce, the more than doubling in the rates of divorce, cohabitation, extramarital sex, non-marital childbearing, pornography, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason why I think it's right now 40% of American children are born outside of marriage is not because of gay marriage. The reason why somewhere between a third and one half of marriages end in divorce is not because of gay marriage. The reason why a minority of all children grow up to age 18 being raised by their married mother and father is not because of gay marriage. There were a bunch of straight people who made a mess of human sexuality and of the family. A bunch of straight people who said, we don't take monogamy or exclusivity or permanence all that seriously in how we live our lives. And then five unelected judges on the Supreme Court said, oh, then we're not going to take sexual complementarity all that seriously either. And so the legal redefinition of marriage is a consequence of the breakdown of marriage, but now it will also be a catalyst. So the legal redefinition is a response to the breakdown of marriage, and now it will further lead to the deterioration of marriage.
What does the court do when it sees another Obergefell? This one having to do perhaps with either polyamory or even, as you mentioned, this is probably waiting farther in the wings, that intergenerational marriage. What do they do with Obergefell as their precedent?
I think here, because we've seen personnel changes on the court, they might overturn Obergefell, but probably not. They might limit Obergefell by saying, oh, that principle, that theory applied in the same-sex relationship, but it doesn't apply in this context for this reason. Justices can be very creative in how they determine either to explicitly overturn something or say they're not overturning something where implicitly they actually are overturning something, or where they just simply limit a ruling, saying, oh, that ruling applied in that context, but a different ruling applies here. And so I have no idea what they'll do with the situations you mentioned. And I think a lot is going to depend on who's on the court when those cases are brought.
Will those cases be brought, in your opinion?
There will be people who bring those cases, but I don't think they'll reach the Supreme Court. My sense is that those will all be settled at lower levels of the justice system. The Supreme Court won't be interested in weighing into those fights.
Why can the law not be neutral between the consent-based and the conjugal views of marriage?
Sure. If you're a lawmaker and you have, let's say we're creating a new country and you're going to have a marriage law, it's going to embody a certain vision. Every one of our laws does this. There's no legal neutrality. There's no policy neutrality. A law against homicide isn't neutral with respect to the good of life. It's saying life is good and therefore murder is wrong. A law about property rights isn't neutral about property, right? Certain things we should have private property ownership, land, buildings. Certain things we shouldn't have private property ownership, people, babies, things like this. And the same is going to be true in marriage. The marriage law will either respect the truth about marriage, that it's the union of a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, or it will enshrine a different vision of marriage, that it's any two consenting adults, or it's any group of consenting adults for whatever time they desire, whether that be permanent or temporary, whether that be exclusive or open.
Ryan Anderson is William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, author of several books, including Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, and a recent column for the Daily Signal titled 4 Years On, Marriage Equality Slogan Still Doesn't Add Up. You can read it and find a link to Ryan's books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ryan, thank you.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues Etc., our series on the Lutheran Confessions continues. We're going to be in Luther's Small Catechism, as we have been with Pastor Paul McCain, on the very last part, Christian Questions with Their Answers, a set of questions written, well, probably by Martin Luther, to prepare for the Lord's Supper. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.